apologize that we are 2 minutes late. I was assuming that the official chairman, not myself, might be in attendance today, since he has chastised all members of this committee about being on time. And we can so note that he's not here, and I don't know where he's at. So I guess he's late. Today we'll be continuing our orientation with excise taxes. And good of you to join us, Senator.
Actually, I was here earlier, Representative.
I know.
I thought maybe you'd converted to Senate time.
Yeah. For the benefit of some of the members in the audience, before we let Mr. Malik continue with our education here, would each of the members take a moment just to introduce yourself quickly and loudly, so that some of the hearing and visual impaired can understand who actually is sitting on the community at this time. If we'll start on my right, or my left, no disrespect, Representative, and just come across, I'd appreciate it.
I'm Representative Chuck Riley, and I'm from the Hillsborough, Forest Grove, Cornelius area, District 29, and welcome all of you.
I'm Representative Esquivel from District 6, which is actually the city limits within the confines of Medford itself.
My name is Representative Betty Comp, and my district is House District 22, and that's Woodburn, Jervis, Brooks, and North Salem.
I'm Representative Vicki Berger, representing District 20, which is part of the Salem area, West Salem, South Salem, the communities of Monmouth, and Independence.
Mark Haas from Beaverton.
You want me to start? Okay. My name is Andy Olson. I'm from the Albany, Benton County area. That's House District 15.
Larry Galizio, House District 35, which is Tigard. And I'm from unincorporated Washington County in King City.
And I'm representing Brian Boquist from the 23rd House District, which is rural portions of Yamhill, Polk, Benton, Lynn, and Marion County. And I'd also like to introduce, have the administrator introduce himself and our committee assistants for those of you.
I'm Paul Warner from Legislative Revenue Office.
I'm Christy Bowman, committee assistant.
Thank you. Again today, we're going to continue, those of us who are freshmen, our orientation on excise taxes. Representative Butler, good of you to join us.
Thank you. I'm sorry you didn't make Mr. Chair.
If no other members would like to take an opportunity for any sort of announcement, we'll go ahead and turn it over, hearing none, to Mr. Malik to start our education process on excise taxes. Mr. Malik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Mazen Malik. I'm with the Legislative Revenue Office. And today, unlike the last 2 days of the previous week when you had the very hard-hitting and the tough taxes to deal with, today you will be exposed to the fun tax segment.
Fun tax.
Oregon. However, some people would think that I'm dreaming today, and these are sin taxes, as they call them. Others suggested they're probably exercise taxes. But excise taxes in Oregon, we define them basically to be first on tobacco, alcoholic beverages, and telecommunications, fuel and weight mile taxes, and transient lodging taxes is a new tax. Well, let's start first with tobacco revenues. And based on your frame of reference again, this either is a fun tax or a sin tax. And it primarily consists of three main products that are being taxed in the state of Oregon: cigarettes, other tobacco product, and then the last source that we get from tobacco taxes comes from the Master Settlement Agreement. And we will talk about these in a little detail a little more. The cigarette tax rate, the Oregon legislature first imposed an excise tax on cigarettes of 4 cents per pack, effective July 1966. Revenue was distributed at that time in 1966 to the state as well as cities and counties in equal proportions. Basically, the cities and counties got 50%, while the state got the other 50, equally divided between cities and counties at 25% each, in order at that time to reduce the pressure on property taxes. Now, the legislature increased the taxes to 9 cents in 1971, and then to 27 cents in 85, which, because this is a fiscal year, it would show. You like this writing thing on it? I find it very creative, but let me see when it gets annoying. In 89, it became 28 cents, and then there was in 1996, we had Measure 44, which was an initiative petition at that time, and it increased the permanent rate to 58 cents. Now, the difference in the ones that you see, also another measure, petition 20 of 2002, hiked that permanent rate by 60 cents, and so it became 118. However, this might look a little bit than 118, because it's 118 plus 10. The 10 cents are the temporary tax rate which elapsed as part of the Measure 30 that was part of the revenue package of the 2003, and that's why you have this downward movement back to 118. So at this point, you're looking at 128 primarily. There were other times, of course, when the legislature put a temporary tax of 7 cents once or twice, actually, in 1981 and 1982. That's this area here where you didn't see it before. And then the 10 cents that elapsed with Measure 30 actually started back in July 1995. And it kept getting renewed every 2 years, every session, until the time when it was also renewed in the 2003 session, but it went down with Measure 30. Now, the always there comes the question is how is Oregon in ranking with different states when it comes to excise taxes on cigarettes? And if we put all the states, including the District of Columbia, that makes it 51, we are about 11 at $1.18 a pack. I hope you're enjoying my special effects of this.
Yes.
Okay, because I did a lot of time working on this. Now, when, of course, we have a distinction of being a no sales tax state. And because of that, every time we compare, our rates and ranking would be different if we look at adding the sales tax to the excise taxes. And if we do that for cigarettes, we will be number 16 rather than the number 11 that we were before. And this is just to emphasize that we're number 16. Now, the in 03, 04, cigarette revenue by itself was 240 million point one. Now, this basically went to different programs, with the health plan taking the lion's share of the distribution at 75%, general fund 16, local 6, and tobacco use reduction account, TORA, at 3%. Now, remember, this 240.1 million is for fiscal year 2003-04, which starts in July 2003, ends in June 2004, which meant there is 6 months of that year that were at 128 or $1.28, and 6 months at $1.18. So once you start seeing the consecutive years after that, you would see the amounts being less than 240, so you won't find it awkward in that sense. The distribution proportions, because of the differences and the temporary rate and the elapse of that, the tax rate, of course, if you read the law, it's 323.030. The tax rate imposed is of 29 mils per cigarette. Now, a mil, of course, is one-tenth of a penny. So you have 10 mils is a cent. All right, so when you take 29 mils, multiply them by 20, you get 58 cents. So the permanent rate that was before, and that was the start of cigarette taxes, were 58%, and that's what we call the permanent. In 2002, with Measure 20, as previously mentioned, that went up by 60 cents, and that what brought us at $1.18. In mills, that would be... Well, let's not go there. However, the if you see each one of these have, and that's why we keep them separate between the 58 cents and the 60, because each one prescribed in law, they have a different distribution percentage. But even that distribution percentage will probably be a little challenging to get it completely out of the law, because as far as the ORS 455 is concerned, this is all general fund and basically comes to about 89.65. And what the law says, 89.65% of the 58 cents goes to the general fund, and then you give another percentage to the health plan and then to the TORA, and the 10.35 is to locals. Locals include cities, counties, and transit. Transit being the services for the elderly and disabled, and that also is distributed to cities, to local transit districts according to population. Now, if you add all these things up, you would, of course, start getting a different percentages altogether. Local from being two pennies, goes down to 9.483 because the base is enlarged. If you go back and look to the previous numbers when the 10% or the 10 cents, before the elapse with Measure 30, that was completely dedicated with the, for the health plan. And once you added that, the health plan gets even a higher percentage of the distribution. And that brings, of course, everybody else down, or all the different ones. And that's why you would see in the previous slide that the health plan had the lion's share of about 75%.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, colleagues, I think that's what Maz is telling us is very important from the aspect that changes of the 10 cents, for instance, which is presently lapsed as a result of Measure 30, if you brought back in the 10 cents, the elasticity, that is the number of cartons and amounts of tobacco sold, the elasticity would not generate. If you're selling a million packs immediately before the 10 cents went into being, you would not sell a million packs immediately after it was imposed. You'd sell something short of a million. Consequently, the local tax that bears off of the upper percentages, those amounts which go locally for assistance in tobacco programs to the cities and to the counties, would thus be affected to the extent that any increase in tax would reduce the amount of sales. That's the elasticity formula. And so I think, Maz, you tell us that we have a piece of legislation that makes certain that local governments, presently, local governments would be held whole in that instance, but that if we were to impose or reimpose the 10 cents again, that local governments could could take a chance at the loss of some of their share because they don't share in the 10 cents. As you show here, 100 cents on a dollar of that collected under the 10 cent temporary tax would go to back to the Oregon Health Plan. Thus, because of the elasticity, the amount that was previously sold and previously collected, that tax that was distributed out to the various sources, including the local governments, and that's the only people that we share with is just the cities and counties, theirs would be affected. And so, and I think it was the last session when we did this, when we imposed the 10 cents, or when I think it was back when we imposed the larger amount, the 60, mm-hmm. went to the 68 or the 60 cents when it went in. We tried to make sure that because of the elasticity, local governments would suffer. They wouldn't. That 60 cents was going to be dedicated, like the 10 cents, dedicated away, and so the share that would be received by local governments would have been seriously affected. And we did pass special legislation to protect local governments that they would receive their share. And I see Michelle shaking her head yes that we did that. I appreciate remembering that way.
That's
thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's the percentage that was adjusted towards the local governments in order to make that transition. However, as I promised in the beginning of this presentation, because it is so fun and vibrant that we really don't need any colored presentation material that you have there, unlike the two stronger ones that you had last week. So we might not get the full effect of the colors that have changed here. The cigarette revenue forecast, as I mentioned before, for the this is what we have, two bienniums, 2001 and 03 is in the books. 03, 05 is still operating now. And of course, 05, 07, you see the lower amounts, and that comes from two sources. It's not only the lapse of the 10 cents that causes that, but also that we have seen a decrease primarily in cigarette consumption, and therefore that decrease also accounts for some of that drop in the chart. However, it's still at about 05 or 07, expected 447.7 million. And for the different segments of what the health plan is getting, still the lion's share at 325. Now, those that measures that this goes a lot slower when on the big screen. Then. You want to see that again?
Well passed.
Right. Mr. Chair,
Representative Olson.
I just have a question. You talked about the decrease in sales of cigarettes and everything. Is that an indication of what's happening with kind of black market cigarettes? And the measurement that you're using, is that specifically for the marketing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, there's probably two effects in here. The effect of actual reduction in use, and that comes from the elasticity of price that one would expect with the increase of price. How this works primarily is when you make tobacco very expensive or cigarette very expensive, the inelastic segment of smokers, if you will, they probably will not quit as much, but it will have a lot more impact on youth, students, and so on, who don't have as much disposable income to spend on cigarettes like they would prefer doing other things, which means they don't start altogether. Right. And if they don't start at a certain age, it doesn't carry on with the future, and therefore you get an overall reduction in use. However, there is probably also a segment of this reduction that comes from different venues of sale. the amounts of this and what it really comes to is part of a discussion that has been going around with the tax collection and the legislature for the last two sessions with the task force that has been established to see where the compliance with the tax compliance task force it's called. And it is looking into ways and different venues that has been leaking out of the system, if you will. But I think for the most part there is also a genuine reduction in smoking. As you would see, this is not, this drop that you see here is not necessarily something that is peculiar to Oregon. In the 1983 and 84, this was a national phenomenon where that was the highest level of smoking we have ever seen in the United States as a whole. And at that time, combination of taxes and increases, federal and state level, have truly made it plummet in a very significant way that was truly noticeable at that time. For example, in 1982-83, the per capita smoking in Oregon was 145 packs. Okay, that's an annual number. Today, you're talking about 50 packs per capita. Now, 50 packs per capita projected to be 45 packs in 2011. This is about 63% drop in per capita smoking. 63 drop is a significant amounts to be looking at. Even if you don't adjust for that 35% population increase that you see, this is from this point to here is about 35% population increase. If you take that out and just take the distribution, the smoking or the tax distributions by population as it was at this point, you're looking still at 75 packs per capita. That's down again from 145 packs. That is still significant.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
Thank you. Maz, before you jump off of that, I was just looking quickly to see if you had a related OTP for other tobacco products line there. Some of that, I think we believe that some of that has been taken up by a shift in the types of tobaccos that folks are rolling their own and those kinds of things. Do we have a similar graph for the use of OTPs in relationship to population and what happened? Even though she looks far too young, Representative Berger said she's part of the folks that helped that drop by 40% from 3.5 to 2.5. So.
Was that year?
I assume that was the year that the label came on that said the Attorney General.
No, that was 40 years earlier.
What was it?
64.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I think we could put a chart on to represent something of this sort. However, I don't think the data would be as good when it comes to the other tobacco products.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
President Butler.
I think that it would be even more instructive if we knew how much was coming from overseas as well. And we're hopeful that there's some way. The arrest of the fellow from Switzerland not too long ago in New York is one foot in the door. And I know that the special programs that the state is running to try and intercept some of this other tobacco product as well as the shipped non-taxed is some way to attempt to get our arms around this issue.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Malik, I think the representative asked the question, so I'll be more blunt. Is there significant smuggling of cigarettes into the state, and would there be significant revenue if we reduce that smuggling, in your opinion?
Mr. Chair, I think this has occupied a large segment of time and effort by what's so-called the task force, compliance task force. And it is a combination between the Department of Revenue, the State Police, and the Judiciary. And they have testified before about what their efforts were. I think they'll be a lot more suitable to talk about this. If you would like, we could probably schedule them at one point to come and discuss with you their effort and what they have accomplished and what they have seen, because they have had some successes and in one area and not in other areas and so on. So I think it will be very very instructive to bring them on, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Malik. The administrator will note that at least two representatives, three including myself, were interested in the smuggling issue and the potential revenue that could be recovered for a future.
I don't think we can make any money off of it. We shouldn't anyway.
Excuse me, I just
want
to let you know that we're supposed to get a leave here in about 10 minutes, so don't mind us if we get
out of here. Thank you, madam.
Because of that reduction that we've talked about, economists are very interested always with the elasticity concept on price and how the price affects consumption and how it deters consumption in that sense. And this chart tries to put both the price of cigarettes as we see it in mostly retail, and how it contrasts with the CPI, where you see a huge difference, almost at one point twice as much in the increase in price as it is the CPI, the general. Now, the other tobacco products is the second leg of the tobacco taxation. And the other tobacco products mean, let me read some of the definitions that comes in the law, other tobacco products. It means cigars, stogies, granulated plug cut, simple cut, mm-hmm. basically snuff flower, anything you would think of that other tobacco use could be is supposed to be taxed according to the laws of the state. And it is taxed at 65% of the wholesale price. And there were two primary rates in 1985 and then in 1997 when you had the other segments for the health plan and the TORA, the Tobacco Use Reduction Account, as well as the general fund. However, the tax on cigars, it seems to be catching the, how would they be put the best, the smell test or the snuff test. It's too much to tax cigars, some thought. Therefore, there's a ceiling in the cigar tax at 50 cents per cigar. That will make it pass the smell test. Now the 0304 revenues, when you look at the other tobacco, it's about 25.3 million. There's a significant difference between the other tobacco and cigarettes, as you'd see. And it is put in the different levels of distribution, if you could see, there's no local government distribution in this scene. And if it wasn't for laws that were put forward in the previous session in 2001, you would not see this segment either. Part of that law says the compliance task force, and this basically goes for the compliance task force. Compliance task force out of the other tobacco has the statutory limitation of about $10 million of the other tobacco products to go into their efforts first for compliance before anything else goes to and be compared with the revenue forecast coming from the Office of Economic Analysis at that point. So if it wasn't for that law, you would not see this segment. If we were doing this presentation in 2003, or if we do it in 2009, because this process of taking the cost supposedly will elapse in 2008. Therefore, if it's not renewed, this compliance would go away in 2008. So finally, the last, and when you look at total tobacco revenue, when you put them both together, of course, that again changes all the percentages if you're looking at the health plan, general fund, transit, and local. And you would see how it the health plan didn't start until here in 1993 or so, when it started getting the amounts. And when you look at the smaller segments, out of the total bigger denominator, the percentages keep going down. Now, master settlement agreement is the third and last segment of tobacco, and it's primarily 47 states who, you know, went through the process and sued against tobacco companies in 1998. Settling companies, about four of them, the biggest ones, which make about 96.4% of total. And then it put provisions in subsequent participating, and those were called that just that way, participating and non-participating. And they agreed to payments in perpetuity and to adjust those payments based on a whole total set of market share and consumptions, the decline, and prices and the increase. So there's elements in the formula that pushes the master settlement payments up. However, there is also other places where it pulls it down. Now, what is going to work into which direction? That is all part of the discussion, I believe.
Mr. Malik, a question, if you would please, on the tobacco settlement. If one of those four companies goes bankrupt, I'm assuming that revenue is then gone. I mean bankrupt to the point of it goes out of business.
Mr. Chair, I think by that time, if that happens, then the whole thing is probably won't be as. I think there will be provisions for certain issues, but not completely safe. So there will be a reduction, for sure.
Thank you, Mr. Malik.
So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, those numbers that you're looking at, the estimated payments, those come from the national payments into escrow, and these are from the original estimates of what it would be. Oregon were to get supposedly out of these billions of dollars 1.15%. That's where the Oregon share would be. And that those are primarily two types, the annual payment and the strategic payment. The strategic payment does not kick in until 2007. And that's an additional 19.3 million. And as you would see, it will continue at the rate of about $70 million, and then at that time it picks up to the 90s. Now, those are all made to somehow be adjusted to anticipated changes. The payments as... what we mean by payments here, these numbers that you would be looking at primarily come from the budget documents that we find in the state. And these, I hope they will not be too confusing. They were confusing for me to put two together. But what it says, basically, up to June 30th, 2003, the state have received $338 million. In settlement payments. Then there was about 99.3 million in interest and investment amounts coming to the state. That's just part of the state treasury. How these amounts were used, about 211 in the OMAP, or 03 in the 03 period or before 03. OMAP is the mother of the OHP. And Oregon Medical Assistance Program. And 125 went to general fund and other smaller segments and programs. That left us with a balance of about 10.2 million. The 03-05 biennium so far promises to produce 144 million. That's about 72 million a year. The health plan is at 42.2. The Oregon appropriation bonds, those are the bonds that were sold against the master settlement, the MSA, master settlement agreement in the previous session, in the 03 session, 450 million. That would be the payment for them in this biennium. And why the payment is low, and you might think it is a little on the low side, is because it did not start until the later segment of the biennium. So they were sold in the end of last biennium, and the payments did not start kicking in until now. There's, of course, the 9.7 million on OHSU debt, and that's only the O2 series. That has the same story of later start on the payments. That, of course, changes in the 05 or 07 biennium, so the payments on the bonds, on the appropriation bonds, is about 86.7, and the two series of the OHSU at 31.9. Having the 24.5 for the Oregon Health Plan, 5.8 for the different, which is part of the enforcement, there is 700,000 to be part of the enforcement of the master settlement agreements. Those are provisions within the master settlement agreements itself. That leaves with a balance of 66.6. And of course, at this point, the bonds will start kicking at 112 million, and the OHSU debt keeps going. By the time, now the bonds, the 450 million appropriation bonds, were 10-year bonds. They were not longer period. So you're looking at about a certain time of about in this period where it starts ratcheting down, and then no more bonds anymore. The OHSU bond are a little longer. They will continue going until about the end of 2023. The amounts I have in the double brackets here is only an assumption of what the OHP at current rate would probably be, and this what would be the balance. The double brackets again, if we assume that this number is correct, so it'll be 3.9 plus the balance that we see at 117 million, and so on.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maz, help me with the OHSU. That's the Oregon Opportunity Fund, is that right? The Oregon Opportunity monies that was extended on Oregon OHSU. Is that what that debt is?
That's what that did.
And that's to be paid out of the master settlement money. Is that what we're calculating here? Right. Now, is that the full 200 million? Is that what the debt service by 23?
It's Mr. Chair, Representative Butler. These are two series. One of them is they come close to that amount, but I could give you the exact amounts if you would.
Mr. Chair, just clarification, if I may.
Yes, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My concern is that I guess I didn't understand that I knew that it was based upon, in part, the good faith of the Legislative Assembly meeting each time, but I didn't remember that we'd used appropriation credits to fund the $200 million. And that's what you're telling us today, is that we used the appropriation credits from the Master Settlement Agreement to fund approximately $200 million. I think they were they were going to generate a couple hundred million dollars in foundation money and $100 million of federal funds or vice versa. And Chair Lowe is here. She could tell us exactly what it was of the Oregon Opportunity Fund or foundation, or I guess it's Oregon Opportunity Fund that Chair Lowe, was it $200 million?
Yes.
Thank you. She's confirming for the record that it was $200 million.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, the first series of what's so-called the 2002 is $93.6 million, and the second one is $109.6
million. Okay.
So that comes to about.
Thank you very much. But that is funded, for clarification, Mr. Chair, that is funded out of the Master Settlement Agreement monies, and which is comes back towards the overall amounts that are collected and tobacco resources, tobacco and other tobacco cigarette products.
Thank you, Representative Miller.
Okay, well, none was smoking. Let's have a drink now. Alcoholic beverages.
I need one.
With every one of these things, there's three segments to them. The first one is beer and cider, wine, and then distilled spirits. The beer tax rates have changed about four times, as you would see. 1933 was the first one, was $1 per barrel of 31 gallons. That translates to about 3.2258 cents per gallon, and that's same thing in 1975, 195, about 6.29 per gallon. So what it means for today, we're about 8.38 cents per gallon. Of course, I don't know how many of you go anywhere and order a gallon of beer to drink, so in order to put it in a six-pack term, or what a bottle of beer would be, a gallon is about 128 fluid ounces, so a six-pack would be about 4.7 cents, almost 5 cents a six-pack. A 12-ounce bottle, which is a common thing, will be about 0.786 of a cent. Okay. So if you sip your bottle at the rate of 1.5 ounce per sip, you would be paying 0.985 of a cent, or almost 10% of a cent for each sip of beer that you have.
Well, Mr. Malik, sir, you know, most of us at the end of this day are not going to be sipping. As we are taking the fire hose from you right now.
Let me know place and time, Mr. Chair. Join. The question that always comes, what the rank of Oregon when it comes to the rest of the states when this tax. And we see that Oregon, when you put excise and sales taxes on beer, is dead last at 51. Well, not dead last, maybe.
Just last.
Last, right.
Okay.
So, 03, 04 beer tax, as we have seen it, is about $6.7 million, and it goes to 50% of it goes to the mental health account, 28% general fund counties and cities. They get 5% for the counties, cities it's 17%. Through the time, beer tax revenue has increased, and the increase have basically came from the increase in population. In 1987, just an anecdote of information, the consumption, beer consumption was about 23.5 gallons per capita. In 1990, it was 23.67. That's about 42 six-packs per year per person. In 95, it started going down to 21.9. In the year 2000, it went back a little bit up to 22.5. And in 2004, it is at 22.35 gallons per person per capita. That's, again, is 39.7 six-packs.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have not made all your six-packs this year, you should go and see who drank the six-packs for you.
He's not the pregnant
drink.
So, wine. We're done with beer. Now, wine... wine have gotten a little more variety in its tax rates, and wine is defined as two kinds. There's a 14% alcohol and less, and that's what we call just regular wine, and then the 14 to 21%, and that's what we call dessert wine. And they are taxed at a different rate, 67 cents per gallon for the 14% and less, and 77% per gallon for the dessert wine. And as you would see, they not all types of wine, so there's no dessert wine in this time period. It actually went when it was temporary and it was allowed to elapse. So, again, if we compare our state to the rest of the nation, and dollars per gallon, Oregon will be about 23, about right in the middle. However, if we put the sales tax in addition to the excise taxes that we have, we would retreat to about number 47. So the wine tax revenue is divided or distributed a little differently, although it's at a little higher at $6.96, almost $7 million. It divides a little differently than the other privilege tax or the beer tax. By we have the wine board that gets a percentage. About 3% goes to the wine board. And of course that changes the complexion of the rest of the distribution formulas here. Now the wine tax revenue, just a little historical reference here in millions of dollars, that's how it basically looks. And you see there was a lot more here and then it went down and just came back up again. I chose these colors to be slightly symbolic of red wine and or burgundy wine and dessert wine.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That mess and that dip, is that a function of less consumption?
That is a function of less consumption, presumably. And just to give you again a number of anecdotal statistics, in 87 we had 3.2 gallons per capita. In that area that you're looking at, in 1990 we went to 2.6%, 95 2.23%. That's a reduction. We started going back a little up, but not much. By 2003, we were at 2.58 gallons per capita. That's a 19.4% drop in consumption from the highest time to the lowest time. But the wine tax revenue, remember, went up the rate of tax itself. So although the consumption is down, but revenue still comes up. That's, of course, one of the blessings of being able to adjust the tax rate. That's, of course, one of your blessings. I have nothing to do with it. The OLC liquor markup. What the OLC does is your distilled spirits has the commission gets the ability by ORS 471.745 to set that markup rate. And what it does today is puts it about 106% of price. So that's how it starts. They get the product, they mark it by 106% and sell it. Now, because of other expenses that they have to incur through the process of selling through the liquor stores controlled by the state, the costs changes with time. So you don't get exactly 106% of that markup as revenue. And you see that it is going to about 101% and just hovering around that percentage. Now, the OLCC sales, as you see it in cases this time, liquor is in cases rather than gallons, and hundreds of millions. And we have here the population increase, the same trend that you've seen before with sales. Also sales of, as you know, there would be also an addition and function of the markup. So the more markup, the more sales comes in. And then the red will be the cases. So you would see the cases themselves started at a certain level. Now we're almost back to where we started, but during the time there was a reduction. However, the just to go back to the and to keep it in gallons in gallon terms, in 1987 per capita we were consuming 1.45 gallons per capita. Went down in 95 to 1.21. Today in 2003 and 4 we're at about 1.33 gallons per capita. The reduction is only 8.3%. So we stopped drinking many things, but not hard liquor.
Excuse me, Burger.
Those per, that just seems like an awful lot of liquor to me. Is that per biennium or by year?
Per year, Representative Burger. And if you haven't drank yours, somebody else has.
Somebody most assuredly has. Thank you.
I can assure you, Representative Berger, I have more than drank yours.
There is an offsetting forces in play everywhere, I guess. The OLCC revenue, in that sense, is probably the most profitable at $304 million. And it divides into, or it comes from different sources. The cost of the general the gross sales, 48%, and operation operative expenditures, and the net sales at 35. Distribution formula for the whole for the all of OLCC's revenue. It's a lot simpler than other formulas because you take the wine first and you fund the wine board that was established in 1984 at 2 cents of the wine tax. Then you transfer all the amounts of money that is left from the wine to the wine and beer tax. You give 50% to the mental health program and 50% you send it to the bigger fund or the bigger pot. That bigger pot of the OLCC, you add to it the liquor markup sales and you give 56% to the general fund, 10% to counties by population, 20 to cities by population, and 14% to cities by formula, which was the 1977, and that's the ORS reference, is anybody interested in that formula itself. Now, revenue distribution of total of what we have talked about from the OLCC comes about $119 million in the 03-04 fiscal year. And that's how it looks with the general fund with the lion's share here at 52.7. Counties get some, cities get more. Mental health gets a slice and the wine board, when you put all the money together, gets a really teeny tiny 0.2%.
Representative.
Yes, could you maybe tell me, I'm kind of, I don't drink, so I have some struggles here. What's a wine board and what's its function?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, I would love to be on the wine board. they bring a lot of wine. No, I'm kidding. Now, the wine board's function is to basically advertise the Oregon brands, Oregon wines, and I think
marketing.
Make the research and marketing and so on for the Oregon-grown wines. So it is a function of how you fund and allow for Oregon wines to be more competitive and better qualities and so on.
Thank you, Representative.
the historical distribution of all CC, just for information, it is a growing function. Increase of 75% revenue, and all that is, of course, due to increases in population and tax rate. We get to the 911 emergency tax. We're done with drinking and smoking now.
And we need help.
Call the police officer.
No. CPR.
In 1981, it was instated that 3% of excess charge was changed 10 years later to 5%, and then there was a formula established in 1995 at 75 cents per circuit, and that circuit includes the cell phone and any connections in that sense. 911 revenue has, because of these changes, have seen an increase. What they do is, of course, fund emergency switchboards for state and counties and so on. Now, that went quickly. After you drink, you need the 911, but for things to work well, they need transportation. So fuel tax. So the state gets a cut of all these gasoline. Is any fuel, as this is how it is defined, which is used for the propulsion of a motor vehicle, and it's taxed at 24 cents a gallon. If it's not used for a propulsion of motor vehicle, it will not be, well, it will be taxed, but you could get a refund. And many people do get a refund.
Representative Burr.
This answers a long-standing question of mine. If I take my gallon down to the service station and say I'm filling up my lawnmower, I can apply for a rebate on the taxes I pay?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, you no, but you will be funding you will be paying for something else that is not a highway fund. This was part of an attorney general opinion that these taxes are, because they're not used for the propulsion of motor vehicle, they could be used for different things that is within the establishment of ODOT to pay for certain.
And so
now, if you actually want a refund, you could apply for that refund and get it. But it's, I mean, that you have to have, so the answer should have been yes and no. Yes, if you do the work and apply for the refund, you can get the refund. But if you don't, there will be an estimate of how many of all of us have done this in the last year or so. And that amount is taken away from the highway fund and put into a different fund called the ODOT Operation Fund. So and in that, they use it to fund functions that are not legally allowed to be funded through the highway fund.
Got it. So I can.
So, yes, you can. But, it, not immediately from the gas station, but you have to go through ODOT and apply and have... I could give you the website.
That's okay.
If you want.
Thank you, Representative.
Now, the... the propulsion of an aircraft has two types of fuel. There is the what's so-called aviation fuel, which is the pistons, not the jet. And jet fuel is at 1 cent per gallon. Diesel, CNG, which is compressed natural gas, and et cetera is also a fuel. If they're used to propel a motor vehicle, because some vehicles are, they will also be taxed at 24 cents per equivalent gallon. But as we know, in Oregon, diesel is mostly, or everywhere, mostly used for heavy trucks, but heavy trucks do not pay diesel tax in Oregon. They pay according to the other type of tax that we have, which is a weight mile tax for vehicles over 26,000 pounds. And for certain vehicles within that class, there is what's so-called the flat fees option. where the trucks of a certain commodities pay on a flat fee rather than per mile. And then there is a third instrument called the road use assessment fees. We'll talk a little more about these in a few minutes. But the motor vehicle fuel tax rates have actually gone up for the state of Oregon, and started actually, if we put this chart back to the history of the time when we started the gas tax in Oregon, we would go up to the beginning of time. Oregon was the first state to levy tax on fuel, mm-hmm. and to the first state to have a highway fund. So we had the mother of all highway funds, kind of. Thank you.
Quickly, REAL, real is?
Real is if you adjust it to inflation in $2,000.
Real.
So if you adjust these amounts or these tax rates to inflation in $2,000, you would have this kind of look, which is not much different in 82 than it is in 93. And why we put 93 is 93 the last time there wasn't a change in the tax rate of fuel. You see in 92, this was known as a 2 plus 2 program for 6 years, when they had 2 cents plus 2 cents plus 2 cents.
Thank you, Representative.
Fuel tax revenue, as you would see, that they started climbing in this time frame, and this is at the time when we described that 2 plus 2 plus, there was several sets of increases. The last increase was here in 1993. At that time, and we're showing 1994 because it will be the full year of the full tax increase, there was 346 million amounts. With all the increases that you would assume with population and number of vehicles and so on, you would assume this increase to continue. But you see the hump here, and then this was the largest year ever that we have seen in the state, which is 2002 at $390 million. Since then, it's going down slightly because of, or a result of, not only the recession, but the prices that we have seen, and the fluctuation in supply, the problems with refineries and so on. Now, this could resume growing, but with my sense is with the introduction of this new type of technology of the hybrid vehicles and so on, where you have a lot more pressure on consumption, and supplementing those types of vehicles with 18 million horsepowers per vehicle, just like the Honda Accord just came with the strongest or the most powerful engine that is a hybrid, but is more powerful than a non-hybrid. This now is starting to offer new alternative to consumers and drivers, where it is saving gas, but at the same time gives you a lot of punch, a lot of oomph, if you will. So that might be the start of another gradual reduction in consumption and taxes. Now, the weight mile tax. What is a weight mile tax? Weight mile taxes in this state basically are for vehicles or trucks that are heavier than 26,000 pounds. The idea that these, at the time when you start going in weights higher than 26,000 pounds, the impacts on highways and roads that you have is higher than the fuel tax or the fuel consumption could capture it. Therefore, weight mile tax is a vehicle to capture that, and capture it per mile. So you would have graduated fees based on weight. The more weight you have, the higher the fee is per mile. So you would, for the 26,000 pounds vehicle, you would have $0.364. Of course, the statutes would not say that, but it would say 3.64 mils per mile. Try saying that a few times quickly. 3.64 mils per mile. And then it keeps going to 80,000 pounds, where it's 11.97 mils per mile. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
Thank you. Maz, I know Idaho has a weight mile tax. Are there any other states that depend upon the weight mile tax as much as Oregon does? Do you know right offhand? Idaho, I think, has a blended diesel tax with a weight mile.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I think out of the five states that have weight mile tax, probably one, which is New York, I think, has as much dependence on the weight mile tax. But I'm not 100% certain that continues to be the case. I could check for that.
Five states have weight miles. Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative.
Now, Mr. Chair, after you get to 80,000 pounds, the whole formula of the ball game, and Representative Berger is very familiar with this 80,000 pounds table B kind of thing. We go into what's called table B. Table B is from 80,000 to 105,000, and it is, instead of only being graduated on weight, be graduated on weight and axles. Meaning if you have a 100,000 pound vehicle, it's not only how much you weigh, but how you distribute this weight on how many axles. In order to encourage people to distribute the weight on more vehicles, on more axles, the table B actually reduces the rate the more axles that you have. And in a minute I'll show you a quick example of that, but before that it will say what's the flat fees, and they are for in lieu of the weight mile tax, and they're for log, sand, gravel, and chip trucks. Now that flat fees are under court challenge at this time. Nevertheless, there's at this time the law of the land. The road use assessment fees are the fees that you start paying as a heavy truck once you go off the charts, if you will. When you have a big, you remember the Spruce Goose when they pulled it through? This was a heavy, big type of piece of equipment that cannot be divided into other pieces. It's an indivisible load, if you will. But that load still is a load. So in order to compensate for it, this is what they charge, is the road use assessment fees. The weight mile tax rates adjusted for the 2003 law changes. Here's what the rate would be under Table A. And once you get to the point of the 80,000 miles and you start adding axles, if you have six axles, your rate, your chart will drop down because you're actually doing less damage. Therefore, you pay less. And so forth, if you get the seven axles, eight axles, and nine axles. I think that's a great chart. Well, it's a great chart just because if you look at these laws in the statutes, I don't think it is as intuitive as becomes as the chart might suggest. In lieu of taxes, you have the flat fees. What they do is they pay per 100 weight. So if you have 100 or 1,000 pounds, you have 10 100 weights, and you would operate. Log trucks were supposedly, historically, the idea behind this was these commodities do seasonal type of hauling, so they would pay a full season, and they were taken on the average and adjusted. They're supposedly studied every year or every biennium to see if that still is the case, and they pay those instead of keeping records and miles and how much and so on. And that is for the convenience primarily rather than the revenue, because they're supposed to be, the idea of them was supposed to be revenue neutral, and these are the issues contested in courts at these at this time. Dump trucks at 6.05, chip trucks, and then the road use assessment fees. These are 5.7 cents per easel mile. And the easel is a very simple term of equivalent single axle load. And it means, according to ASHTO, the relationship between actual or requested weight and an 18,000-pound single axle load as determined by the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. Road test reported at the Proceedings Conference of 1962. So this is not a new concept. And believe it or not, this definition is in our statutes, or S818225. That's how we define a single axle load, and we charge the road use assessment fees on it. Weight mile tax revenue, finally. It has grown because it is important to remember, well, there is the idea and the concept of cost responsibility in the state, and this is also codified in the Constitution, which means light vehicles and heavy vehicles have to pay their fair share, which also means that if you increase gas tax, that means you have to have a commensurate increase to maintain that relationship in the weight mile tax. So that the relationship of increase that you saw with fuel tax before have had with it coupled an increase in the weight mile tax. However, the weight mile tax, because it's dependent on trucking, is a lot more sensitive to economic downturns than the fuel tax, which is less elastic than trucking and economic activity. And that's why you see in this area here that dip that is in parallel, if you will, with the national and Oregon recession. The less economic activity there is, the less trucking and hauling there would be, and therefore you would see the sensitivity exhibiting itself as a lot more than you would still go to the store and you would still go drive to work and you would still drive your daughter to school and so on your gas tax. Now, you're done with transportation, now we'll take you on a vacation. And if you go on a vacation, you would go to, this is a new tax, transient lodging tax. This was out of House Bill 2267 of the 2003 session. I think members of this committee have probably seen this tax in front of them, or ever been here before. And what it does, it imposes a statewide tax of 1%. DOR, the Department of Revenue, administers this tax and collects it and transfers the net. It's allowed about 2% as a collection cost, and then transfers it to the Tourism Commission. What the Tourism Commission does, not too far in concept from the wine board. So the Tourism Commission would basically work into enhancing tourism into Oregon and advertising Oregon in order to bring more visitors and more tourism into the state. And also it funds the regional marketing program. So if you have regions within the state that have like POVA, Portland Oregon Visitor Association, and so on. The providers who collect the tax are allowed about a 5% allowance for the collection and the tax. It started on January 1st, 2004. It's supposed to transmit quarterly. And it also, within the same law, it established limits on local taxes for lodging taxes. that all these taxes, if they are to be instituted newly, new after this date, they have to have almost a designed function. 70% of this function or this revenue needs to go to a tourism-related type of activities. Under that assumption, that is working. That was part of a compromise of the last session between the state and the local government. The transient lodging tax revenue, because we don't have that much history to talk about, this is what Legislative Revenue Office have estimated in the last session. And the OT05 will have about $16.5 million and $20 million a biennium after that. The first quarter that we have realized as actuals, and only first quarter because if it started, remember, in January of 2004, it took a while before it sets up. There was a lot of time, letters, and preparations by the Department of Revenue, and it seems like some people or some operators knew that they need to pay the tax, others didn't. And that's just every time you initiate a program, it just not necessarily picks up running, if you will. But there was a collection of about $1.6 million for that first quarter. If you take about the 7% for collection cost, so that's at 93%, you're talking about $1.72 million a quarter. Taking that at eight quarters, that gives you about $13.76 a biennium. So that's still is within the stone throw, if you will, of the estimates. So this time, I guess we're still sticking with these estimates because of what we have looked at historically. If we trace everything, all the other jurisdictions within the state that institute that type of tax, we have an average rate of about 8%. And if you look at them, what has been done since 1991, you see these amount of tax revenues going to the different jurisdictions that institute them. You're talking about $65.5 million a year at about 8%. If you divide that, you'll get about $8.2 million per percent. So the state has 1% also, and that's not all jurisdictions, the 8.2, which means your estimate or our estimate of $20 million, if you make it statewide at 8.2% or non-statewide, you're still in the ballpark. And with that, I think I've taxed your... patients, as well as your alcohol, cigarettes, and lodging tax.
Any further questions from members of the committee to Mr. Malik? If not, thank you, Mr. Malik. Appreciate your enlightening presentation. In the Army, we call you, your type, a PowerPoint ranger. And there are several of us who are having challenges with that. The administrator might want to note that two questions came up that seemed unresolved. One was several members interested in smuggling of cigarettes, which I'm sure we can address at a different time, and then the actual five states and the weight mile tax. I'd like to publicly thank Representative Butler for taking time out to go out and recognize the disabled and senior members that came into the room upon their departure. And with that, Representative Butler, do you have any further announcements?
Mr. Chair, we'll continue to pass the gavel on the basis of just alphabetical, and so wherever your name fits in that after Goldquist, be prepared to do the gavel open, gavel
is that
meet.
Is that
Butler.
Escobar?
No. Butler's Burgers and Hass's are all excluded.
But so noted. Thank you, members of the committee. Thank you, members of the audience. We are. We'll close this day's meeting, and we will reconvene tomorrow at 1:30.